Have you heard of the regional town of Yakandanda in Victoria? Since 2014, community members have been incredibly proactive when it comes to climate action in that town, creating a network of buildings with solar and batteries. The member for Mayo, Rebecca Sharkey, has recently hosted an online presentation with the team in a bid to learn more about their efforts. She joins me now to share what she's found. Hi there, Rebecca.
Good morning, Jenny. Yeah, we had a webinar, first webinar, I think, that we've put together. We're a little bit new to that technology, but it was well received in the community and with lots of people participating. And that was looking at how the little town of Yakandanda, so in northeastern Victoria, very similar electorate to Mayo, so that's the electorate of Indi that was held by Independent Cathy McGowan, now held by Independent Helen Haynes. And some of you might remember, a couple of months ago, before Victoria went into lockdown, we had Helen Haynes come over to the electorate to talk about her community experiences. And I thought, let's dig down and get together with those in the Yakandanda community that have ensured that Yakandanda has become 100% renewable, standalone community energy. So they've done some really exciting things. They now have their own standalone big battery, but they started small. They started with solar on rooftops, bulk buying a solar to make cheaper deals for everyone, but also people who can't afford to put on solar can get cheap power, renewable energy power, through the Indigo Power Company, and that provides much cheaper than many other retailers, and they're also being involved in the renewable energy space. So it's really exciting to see what they've done. A very small town, you know, much like our towns of Eubadla or Lobethal or even Strathalbyn. So I think we can do some similar things here in our community.
What have you been inspired by? What do you think we could replicate in our towns?
Well, I think if we can get a bit of grant funding to start with looking at putting some, solar perhaps on some of our community-owned infrastructure, which is what they started doing in Yakandanda, and then work out how we can network those powers together, I guess you could say in a bit of a power-sharing experience. I think ultimately if we can get to a point where we are managing ourselves as a small retailer, perhaps in one of our towns, in Indigo Power, I think it's about 50% is the charges compared to most retailers in the area, we really would have a chance to create really resilient towns. And that was one of the key points, is that you're then not relying on being part of a statewide grid of electricity. And by having the battery backup in that township, they're another township that is a high-risk bushfire area. So I think what we need to do is start small. Let's work on getting maybe, some group deals for solar, maybe small mini solar batteries on people's homes, and go from there. So we had a lot of people and local government involved, and I'll be talking with our local government leadership across the area to see what we can do, perhaps with some of our small towns in our region, and seeing who in those towns are interested in getting involved. There were certainly a number of people listening in that want to do more.
Rebecca Sharkey's with me. She's the member for Mayo. Regional Development Australia has put out a report today. It's all about some recommendations with regards to transport through the Adelaide Hills up into the Murraylands. A lot of congestion through the freeway. I think a lot of people really felt that during that fatal truck collision on Friday last week. And, you know, there has been a lot of talk of trying to divert some of those trucks from the freeway. Is that one of the major points that the report is making today?
Well, looking at RDA, Adelaide Hills, Fleer and Kangaroo Island report, they're really going down two avenues, one being freight transport and how we can get more trucks and a better Freight Hills bypass, and looking at the capacity of that and how that can be improved. And I think that that's going to be critical with respect to safety on the freeway. We know about 10% of the vehicle movements are trucks. Obviously, we're not going to be able to get all of them off the freeway. Some of them do need to be doing their deliveries within the city. But quite a few will be able to use the freight bypass, or already using the freight bypass. So much of the work is on how to improve the freight bypass. So that's, essentially before they get to the Adelaide Hills, heading north. And the second part, second component to RDA's work looks at public transport. Now, the RDA is talking about bus rapid transit services, so that's, you know, higher frequency, shorter trips, less stops, and new park and rides. And I think the new park and rides is going to be critical to the success of getting more people to leave their car at home and get on public transport. One of the issues that they raise is, you know, creating those better bus corridors, particularly along Glen Osmond Road. Now, I'm going to be really keen to make sure that that doesn't mean that, you know, there's a loss of a lane for those who perhaps can't get on public transport. I still can't see why we can't use a system like they use in many places around the world, you know, Coronation Drive in Brisbane, where they basically highlight the roads and divide a four-lane road, three lanes going one way when it's peak hour and one the other, and then swap them around just to ease that congestion. But it's good to see the RDA is putting a lot of time, effort and resources into these two critical issues in our region.
And that's something that the federal and state governments will be considering?
Well, from here, RDA will be pushing to get some commitments, I believe, from state government. We'll need to get Infrastructure SA to essentially say, yes, these are top priorities for the spend in South Australia. If there's significant spend, it then needs to go into Infrastructure Australia's list of priority projects. But really, for me, as the federal member, if we can get state government buy-in on some of the proposals by RDA, I can then, if they're costed, then go to the federal government and say, these are the critical needs in our area. They're supported by state government. They're supported by local government. I understand in RDA's working out these transport recommendations, local government was already around the table, as were freight operators, state government agencies. So it's really important that we get, everyone singing from the same hymn book with respect to this, because there are many ideas right across the region on how we can improve transport, both freight and public transport. And once we have consensus and it's costed, I can then do my job and fight for that federal funding.
Member for Mayo Rebecca Sharkey is with us. Rebecca, I hear you've had a lot of feedback from a recent survey of your constituents on the My Aged Care system. What are some major concerns people have flagged with you?
We did. We received 1,200 responses. Well, actually just over that, and they're still coming in from people in our community. I wrote to everybody who is age 75 and over and lives in Mayo, and their responses are deeply concerning. What I asked was, what's your experience with My Aged Care in the home? Do you receive a package? And if you do, what does it look like? If you don't receive a package, are you on the waiting list? Well, we had, some quite alarming responses. Now, many people do have a really good experience with home care, and much of that is down to their personal carer that they receive. But around half of the people responded saying that they were unhappy or unsure with their administration and management fees. What we know is that people are being charged out of their package of home care that's there to provide care in the home. People are being charged up to 45% of that package in administration and management fees. And so half of the people who responded are pretty unhappy about that. They're certainly not happy about that. We know that around a third of respondents, or around 400 people, are waiting for a package. That's a lot of people in our community who are waiting for care in the home. And of those 400 people, around a third have been waiting for 12 months or more. Now, the federal government announced in the budget an extra 80,000 packages over the next 2 years. That's welcome. That's significant. But that's still a little while off. And I'm very concerned for the people who have been waiting more than 12 months since they were assessed as needing care. It's not that they're assessed as needing care 12 or 2 years ahead. It's that they need care now. Mm. What we're doing now, I've putting the final touches on some legislation. I think that there's a great lack of transparency, and I think that's where a lot of the frustration and unhappiness is coming from with respect to administration and management fees. So there's two parts that I'm working on that we'll be putting bills into the Parliament. We already have our first draft back. One of them is to cap the amount that providers can charge in administration and management fees. I can't see why, on a low-level package, a provider should charge any more than a quarter, so 25%, of the bucket of money that's supposed to be there for care, particularly given that over half of the people who responded said that their home care plan had not changed over the life that they've had that home care plan. So you've got to question, well, what are these administration and management fees actually going to? The other part that I want to see is greater transparency. We're seeing a very diverse range of fees being charged to people, both in the hourly rate out of their package as well as the management fees. And I think providers should need to share with their client, the person that they're providing the care to, where their fees sit compared to other providers who are delivering services in the region. So I want people to feel empowered, that they know what they're being charged compared to other people, and also to put some caps in on how much of that package is going into executive salaries and management services.
Because I imagine, you know, keeping people in their homes is a really important way to go when it comes to the ageing population.
I think it's the foundation of aged care in Australia. If we get home care right, we have less people entering residential care early. It doesn't mean that there won't be some time in their lifetime a need to go into residential care. But people tell me that they want to have as much support as they can to stay in their home. Now, if a package is being whittled away in management fees, that means that there's less hours of actual care being delivered in the home. And I want to see as much of a package to be spent on actual hands-on care.
Now, before you go, Rebecca Sharkey, I understand you're finalising some dates for a grant writing workshop.
We certainly are, so stay tuned for those. I think we had such success with the Yakandanda and getting everything online, we thought, well, let's do some grant writing workshops online. Many people attend our grant writing workshops when we have them face-to-face, but a lot of people are working during office hours. So we're going to take it online and stay tuned. We'll make sure we get the dates to you.
Thanks so much for your time today, Rebecca Sharkey.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.